25. Jin. Jin kept an eye out for Rose Ashby. Though a line had begun to form at the door, most of the vampires loitered beneath the fractured stars, deep in conversation. Jin had seen his fair share of the undead on Spindrift's floor, but he'd never seen this many, and in so posh a setting. No different than a ball on Admiral Grove. He bit his tongue to stop from spiralling down another memory. His mother in a dress as pink as the sky's first blush. His father in a suit sharper than his cheekbones. Their hands clasped. Their conversation rife with blood and needles and bacteria and teasing. Even en route to a dinner party. A hush fell when a girl of 20 started up the path to the Aetherium doors. Her hair the same vibrant red as her voluminous skirts, drawing every eye that wasn't already on her. Jin's heart squeezed. This was it. Rose, Jin said, stepping past a pair of vampires to catch her eye. She stopped walking, the billow of her skirts coming to a halt. Dread fleeted across her brow. Jin, are you turned? Not yet, love, Jin said. I don't like the idea of never savouring a pastry again. Had she been any other vampire, he would have chosen his words with more care. Oh, she said, envy wrapped around the word. Are you here with someone then? I'm not, Jin admitted, and cast a glance around the garden. Or rather, I was, before I was abandoned. Rose laughed, a tinkling that drew them unneeded attention. I find it hard to believe anyone would leave you, Jin. The words struck him with a pang. If you can give me a name, I can go looking, she offered. That wouldn't be necessary, really, Jin said. And then, as if he'd just had the thought, he added, although I am much more in favour of seeing the sights than leaving without the night I was promised. Sweet Jin, I would be your date if I didn't already have arrangements, she said, and Jin didn't think the sympathy in her tone was false. That was what he liked about Rose. He looked away, mustering as much of a sulk as he could. He could almost feel Arthi's gaze from the crowd, counting every precious second. The line into the Aetherium shuffled forward, and if this took any longer, they'd be the only ones left for the doorkeeper to scrutinise. But if you're here for the night you seem to be alluding to, you wouldn't need me, would you? Rose asked. Her expression spoke of devilry. You only need to reach the right wing. So I've heard, Jin said. He had every intention of avoiding the right wing and its dedication to debauchery. He cast a look at the light spilling from the Aetherium's double doors. The hope and longing he conjured was only partially a lie. I need to get inside the Aetherium for that. She paused, a furrow in her brow. He'd spoken the words too quickly, hadn't he? It was the pressure, the worry, the weight of this night as heavy as the clouds in the sky. She knew he was a Casimir. She knew the mischief he and Arthi were about. And if someone like Rose Ashby could get him inside without a hitch, no one would doubt her if she sounded an alarm either. Come on, Rose. Come on. With a sprightly laugh, Rose held out her arm, and Jin exhaled in relief. Well then, allow me the honours. He took it, calming the restlessness in his limbs as they joined the slow-moving line. Before long, the pair of them were bathed in gold before the doorkeeper, Elise Thorne, and Jin was once again grateful that he'd run into the other sister at the Thorne's house on Admiral Grove. Matteo had been spot on with his descriptions and depictions. It was exactly as Jin had imagined. He watched as Rose dropped her marker through the slot and introduced him as her human date for the night. Elise chastised her for not having him vetted, ignoring him like he was some brainless arm candy. and Rose apologized in good form. When the bouncer finally frisked him down, he had to bite his tongue against a comment or two. And then he was in. Jin stopped just inside the doors to leisurely button up his jacket and scan the space at the same time. The area was lit by lamps, shaped like open palms gripping bulbs. The walls a deep, dark crimson, patterned in damasks. Eerie but fitting. Farther inside, there were silk-wrapped settees, tufted cushions and scattered armchairs. He saw vampires sitting far too close to one another, others lounging with flutes of crimson. There was a quartet playing cards, and another tittering over an engagement ring. Wicked knives. He was inside the Aetherium. Something clinked beneath his right foot. He glanced down to the lacquered wood floors and saw the pair of channels set feet apart and covered in glass, just as Matteo had said. As he stood there, two markers shot in the direction of the archive room. A lone, freestanding accent wall rose up ahead, bedazzled with pearled tiles behind a massive flower pot. The marker archive's room was just beyond it to the right. The mezzanine extended high up on his left, letting in the cool night air. On it, the dormer guard was pacing back and forth. "There will be at least one blind spot," Arthi had said. "They're not worried about anyone messing with the chutes once they're already inside." Easy for her to say. Jin tracked the guard's line of sight, trying to find Arthi's blind spot. He needed to get to the other side of the freestanding wall. If only that toxin lasted longer than 10 minutes. She could shoot the guard now, and Jin would have more freedom to wander around. "Don't worry about him," Rose said, following Jin's gaze to the guard. "He can make the foyer feel like a prison. Let's get to the party." Jin laughed. "I think I ought to sit down for a bit. I'm feeling a tad overwhelmed. Never thought I'd be here in the Aetherium, you know." That, at least, wasn't a lie. She gave him a look. Ah, she'd forgotten he wasn't a vampire. "This way," she said, gesturing toward the small alcove beneath the guard's mezzanine. "Perfect. It'll be empty 99% of the time because the fun is inside, not in the foyer, and no one likes to be watched," Matteo had said. At least not by a guard, Jin had thought. Rose led him to the settee and released his arm. Jin held on. "Thank you, Rose." Of the emotions he'd displayed since meeting her tonight, this one he meant. And he hoped she could see as much. "No," she said with a bittersweet smile. "I will always have you to thank, Jin." Such a strange thing, to be appreciated by a woman for killing her beloved brother. He sat down. Rose disappeared down the hall. Jin took off his specs and got to work. 26. Flick. Flick left the cover of the gardens and touched her pocket, berating herself one more time. If she didn't want her lighter confiscated, she couldn't keep drawing attention to it. The others hadn't thought to ask Flick for her weapons. She was armed with a longing that was killing her, and no one knew. She willed her feet to work, her arms to remain still, her blood to stay whisper quiet. No one was looking at her, but it certainly felt as if they were. Her awareness was slowly narrowing to obscurity. This was it. The line crept forward, giving Flick her first glimpse of the doorkeeper at the entrance, and she was once again relieved to find that it wasn't Eleanor Thorne. This sister's gaze was a dewy brown, her nose more pert than her sister's sharp angles. Flick caught sight of Jin crossing from one end of the foyer to the other. She flipped the expired marker in her hand, digging the grooves into her palm with each turn. She felt the weight of her lighter in her pocket like a stone. The line moved, and then moved again. The vampire behind her glanced down the length of her dress and called it pretty. Flick thought she said thank you, but she couldn't remember. Then it was her turn to stand before the soft light of the Ethereum entrance and remember how to breathe. 27. Jin. Using the tungsten carbide frame of his specs was simple enough, and Jin cut through the glass that cased the chutes within minutes, right where they disappeared beneath the freestanding wall. If anyone looked, the notches would appear to be design flaws, neat ones. He popped the lenses out of the frame and positioned them above the chutes, readying for when he needed to shove them into place and stop the markers from returning. He would swing the arms of his glasses to propel the markers forward again after. For now, he leaned back against the freestanding wall, out of sight from the dormer guard. Time to wait. Wait for Arthi. Wait for Laith. Wait for Mateo. He popped a clove rock into his mouth. Lovely. 28. Arthi. Arthi hid behind the Ethereum's rose bushes and lined up her shot, watching Flick get closer and closer to the entrance. The wind blew east in intermittent bursts, forcing her to adjust her trajectory more than once. The dormer guard paced in and out of the Ethereum, vigilant and out of reach. Laith opened his mouth. Arthi thought this conversation had already gone twice as long as it should have. "He might hear the bullet," he said at her side. "They're designed to be silent, but I'll take that chance," Arthi murmured, keeping her eye on Flick and her finger on the trigger. Laith opened his mouth again. "Nope," Arthi said, watching the door as Flick inched closer and closer. She inserted her marker. Arthi fired. The bullet slung through the night, flashing once before it disappeared. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the guard teetered against the iron balustrade and collapsed. 10 minutes, Arthi whispered, tossing the gun into the bushes. 10 minutes before their guard awoke and sounded the alarm. 10 minutes for Flick to get in and out of the marker archives. Arthi flipped the forged marker in her hand and joined the line, Laith and Mateo behind her. 29. Flick. Flick stared blankly at the doorkeeper at the entrance to the Ethereum. Elise, Flick told herself. Referring to her by name made her less formidable. Flick paused. "Do I?" "First step to a con," Arthi had told her. "Act like you belong. Look sharp." She squared her shoulders and pressed her marker into the slot. Her expired marker, Flick's nerves reminded her. It fell with a heavy plink into the channel below, and then something clicked, propelling it into the hall behind Elise. To her right, another vampire did the same. And that was when Flick heard it. Just as Arthi had promised, the zing of a bullet hurtling through the air. Flick's pulse soared the same way. Elise was watching her. "You've gathered quite the crowd tonight," Flick said, the words bubbling out of her. "It will be exciting to meet everyone." Arthi would have advised against chit-chat, but that was what Jin would do. Flick might not possess his charm, but she knew how to be kind. Elise softened. "Indeed, the charity auction attracts vampires from around the country." The chutes rattled with the sound. Flick knew her marker would trigger a rejection, that it was all part of the plan, but that didn't make it any easier to stand here. That didn't mean nothing could go wrong. Jin couldn't charm an inanimate object into letting her through. A cold sweat dampened Flick's palms. She touched her hand to her breast, already feeling the stake with her name on it, splinters making little rips at her skin while blood gushed free. She'd bleed to death, and her mother's forgiveness wouldn't be as important anymore. "Stick to the plan, and we'll be fine." "Easier said than done, Arthi," Flick thought. The bouncer shuffled beside the door, his coat bulging around his muscled frame. Flick had never seen such a large man. She blearily wondered how much blood he needed to consume to maintain such a figure. "That's not what you need to be thinking about," she chastised herself. The markers returned with a tinny sound that could have been a siren for the way the noise rang in her ears. Flick gulped, but Elise only handed her marker back, blotted in something green that was already fading. She had to refrain from inspecting it, pressing the marker's grooves into her palm, spying the faint smudge of red beneath the green approval. She snuck a glance at the marker of the vampire beside her. The green was much brighter. Had Jin rubbed some off of it to approve Flick's? The doorkeeper looked like she knew precisely what Flick had done, but didn't know how. Flick didn't know either. "Enjoy your time at the Aetherium, miss." Flick thanked her and stepped into the lavish opulence of the Aetherium. The walls dripped in sinful decadence. The heels of her boots clicked on the tiles like bullets in a glass. The chutes rattled as another pair of markers shot through. She didn't look back to see who it was. It wouldn't be anyone in the crew. They had to wait for her. She inhaled, grounding herself in the rich and earthy scent. It was amber and spice, old books and cloves, and perhaps blood. But it was very lovely. Up above, the ceilings were illustrated, dark designs almost invisible in the swirling black. "Keep walking," Arthi had told her. "Don't stop for anything." She didn't. "Don't draw attention to yourself." Flick kept walking. 30. Arthi. Arthi approached the entrance of the Aetherium, repeating the plan to herself. Every angle and every leg, each of the possibilities they'd predicted where something could go wrong. And Arthi knew, Flick hadn't yet added the forged markers into the log. But she did it anyway. She dropped her marker into the slot. Elise Thorne sneered at Arthi in recognition, fangs coming out in earnest as tension spiked the air. But the Aetherium put its members first, and she wouldn't say a word. Not until Arthi's marker returned. Which it did, smeared a different colour. Not green, not red, but yellow. A violation, as Mateo had warned. Across the foyer, Jin stared. Fear and concern were rampant on his features. "It'll be okay," Arthi willed him to understand, holding his gaze. She could handle herself, and he knew it. "Unsurprising," Elise spat, gesturing the bouncer forward. Neither of them noticed Flick tucking herself into the nook behind the archive room, or Jin hovering near the chutes in preparation to smash through the glass. The bouncer bent to frisk her, moving his meaty hands across her spread arms, along her waist, and then down each of her legs. It took everything in Arthi not to kick him off of her. "Come with me," the bouncer demanded. Arthi held her ground. They knew who she was. They should know she would never give up without a fight. He stared for a senseless minute before he dismissed her petulance with a grunt and swung. She ducked clear of his punch. "Think you can rough me into obedience?" The bouncer grabbed her by the arms, locking her in place. Too many eyes were on her. Too much attention. Laith's jaw tightened. Mateo gave her a reassuring nod. Arthi bit her tongue, saying nothing as the bouncer dragged her through the doors and inside the Aetherium. She'd been through worse, she told herself. This was nothing. This was necessary. But as far as plans went, there was no backing out now. 31. Jin. "Focus," Jin murmured to himself. Arthi could handle herself. He pulled his tie free and wrapped it around his gloved fist, waiting until a pair of vampires disappeared into the halls. Then he crouched and slammed his fist through the glass chutes. It took two more punches before it shattered, and Jin carefully pushed the fractured pieces into the chute until there was enough to obstruct the markers, leaving the archive room. If only he could use the tungsten carbide again. But he needed a mess. A proper distraction that didn't look like it had been perfectly planned. He stepped back and surveyed the broken glass. That should draw her out. He backtracked to the settee where Rose had left him and sat down with a view of the archive room. The door swung open, and Jin heard the vampire's sigh as she rounded the corner. A sequined grey-green dress clinging to her figure. Eleanor Thorne. She slipped several small discs that resembled weights into her pocket as she walked, her sea-glass eyes missing nothing. For a moment, Jin was afraid she'd seen him lingering in the dark, but her attention was on the obstructed chutes. "What is it?" Elise called from the entrance. Jin tucked himself deeper into the alcove.
"Some imbecile shattered the glass," said Eleanor.
"Imbecile?"
"He had shattered that with care, thank you very much. He had taken the time to flirt once, and it was biting him in the ass relentlessly."
"Keep talking," Jin goaded, one eye on the vampire and the other on the door to the archive room as it slipped closed again, the hem of Flick's gown disappearing inside.
32. Flick. Flick was almost surprised when she made it into the marker archives intact. She was grateful that Arthi had knocked the Dormer Guard out. She couldn't fathom trying to slip under both his and Eleanor Thorne's noses undetected. The clock was ticking. Laith still needed to apprehend the guard before he woke up, and she had little time to waste. The room was more bare bones than the vampire's fancy gown had suggested it would be. There was a wide ebony desk and chair in its centre, then a comfy armchair and a sideboard by the door, atop which sat a brass scale, polished from daily use. "Now," Flick said, tugging the silk gloves off her hands, "where is that log?" An indignant meow responded, spooking her half to death. It was Laith's kitten. "Oh, hello there, little one." Flick didn't know how she had snuck in after her, but she wasn't about to shoo away company. And she had found the log. It was on the desk, open to a page with rows of numbers, just as Matteo had described. What he had failed to mention was the reason why the vampire didn't bother locking the door behind her each time she left the room. The log itself was locked. It lay beneath a glass case whose latch connected to a series of levers that ran all the way to the brass scale on the sideboard. It was indeed used daily. Every time Eleanor accessed the log, she balanced the scale to unlock the glass box. She didn't have to do a thing to lock it either, just grab the weights on her way out. The scale was still wobbling from her recent quick exit. No time to panic, Flick told herself. The sideboard was too far from the desk for her to press down on the scale with one hand until the case unlocked while entering the numbers with the other. She searched the room for something she could use to balance it. The weights had to be with Eleanor. They were every bit a key, but there was no chance of someone finding the exact weight quickly enough to tamper with the log. And whenever Eleanor anticipated being gone for longer, she simply had to lock the door behind her. It was smart. Flick thought Jin would appreciate it. She plucked up the pen holder beside a fountain pen in a delicate stand and set it on the scale. It barely tipped. The kitten meowed. Aha! Flick snatched her up and set her in the pan, which promptly fell with a clang. Too heavy. Think, Flick. The weights had to be a reasonable load to be carried around. Something easy enough to slip into the indecently small pockets of a woman's gown. Something as small as a lighter. Holding the kitten in one arm, Flick fished the lighter out of her pocket and set it in the pan. It was worth more than its weight in brass, more than the liquid gas inside its chamber, more than the wheel that kept it working. It was the love her mother once had for her, and it was enough. It had to be. The seals exhaled, unlocking the glass case with a sigh. Flick flipped over a single luxuriously thick page, fountain pen in hand, then froze at a sound. Leif's kitten looked up at her with a curious tilt of her head. And then the door swung open. Flick grabbed the lighter off the scale and dove under the desk. She held her breath. The vampire stilled in that terrifying way, motionless and statuesque. "Don't breathe. Don't breathe." But there was one advantage to Leif's kitten having followed her. She bounced away from where she'd been swatting at the throat tossed over the side of an armchair. The vampire relaxed, the sequins of her dress catching the low light when she crouched and crooned at the kitten. Flick held very, very still. If she so much as turned her head, Flick was... No, she was not going to let herself think that far. "Duty calls, little one," the vampire said, and rummaged through the sideboard. She emerged with something smooth and flat. To repair the chute, Flick realized, and disappeared back outside. Flick had seconds. She hurried out from under the desk and slammed her lighter back on the pan, barely waiting for the seals to release before she pried open the glass, snatched up a pen, and started scribbling the first identifier into the log. 393-4220. Her hand shook, forcing her to round out the curve of the 9 more than once. "Done. One down," Flick murmured, moving on to the next one. 393-4221. The silence broke with a rattle. Markers. If markers were being sent through, the chute had been repaired. Jin's distraction had come to an end. "Come now, Flick." She spurred herself on. 393-4. She stopped, narrowly saving herself when ink swelled from the fountain pen's tip. 2-2-2. Flick dropped the pen with a flourish. "Wait." She picked it back up and jammed it into its stand, grabbing the tin beside it to dust sand over the wet ink and nearly inhaling it in her rush to blow it off. She tidied up the space until Leif's kitten rubbed against her ankle. Flick picked her up and hurried for the door. A lighter. She rushed back to the sideboard and shoved it in her pocket. Then she ran, hair falling over her face. She certainly looked the part of a lost girl when she flung the door open and came face to face with the cruelly beautiful Eleanor Thorne. Flick took a few steps back. "My deepest apologies, miss," she blustered with a smile that felt more like a grimace. "I thought this was the lavatory." 33. Jin. Jin heaved a sigh of relief when Flick exited the archive room with a charming smile and a minute to spare. He didn't have to worry about her anymore, but he was still worried about Arthi. When he was certain Eleanor Thorne wasn't about to re-emerge again, he left the cover of the alcove and joined Flick by the accent wall, her sweet sunshine scent soothing his nerves almost immediately. It took everything in him not to pull her into his arms. The chutes rattled with the markers hurtling through, and then Leith was inside, stalling near the alcove beneath the dormer where the guard's toxin-induced catnap would begin wearing off at any moment. Matteo needed to hurry up with that distraction. A voice rose from the doors. At last, Jin thought, nearly forgetting the painter was in disguise when a blonde man in tinted specs began insulting the vampire beside him in Matteo's voice. "Nice suit, old boy. Does it come in men's sizes?" Ouch. It was no wonder Matteo saw no need for violence. His jibes were brutal enough. Jin gave Laith a nod. Laith flexed his limbs and began his ascent to the mezzanine. But everyone was looking at Matteo, too riveted by his audacity to notice a hooded human crawling up the wall. When Matteo had made the suggestion back in Spindrift, none of them had believed an argument over style could distract anyone. But Jin stood corrected. There was good sense, and then there was affluence. "Who are you? Do you know whom you're speaking to?" The other vampire hissed at Matteo. Jin was only half listening. He was watching Laith. They had seconds before the guard woke. Seconds before he sounded the alarm. "I do indeed," Matteo intoned solemnly, leaning toward the other vampire. "Someone who left his fashion sense in the grave." There was a scuffle of shoes out on the steps and raised voices. And then Laith was finally out of sight, and everything was quiet. Jin waited. Flick made a sound. "Do you think he's all right?" she asked, eyes locked on the shadows of the mezzanine. "Done and dusted, love," Jin said, guiding her deeper into the Ethereum. The room would be a lot louder if Laith hadn't reached the guard in time. Time for phase two. 34. Arthi. The bouncer had Arthi's elbow in a vice-like grip. He led her to the Ethereum's prison, where the vampire standing guard sneered at her. What was with all the sneering? He threw open the gate with far too much excitement and locked it behind her and the bouncer, leaving the two of them alone. The room was sterile with a set of empty cells and another reinforced door at the end. Arthi jerked free before the bouncer could continue the ploy and throw her in one of them. In every discussion of her plans with the others, Arthi always faced pushback on one particular part of it. The bit where she got caught. It was dangerous and risky, and Jin tried talking her out of it more than once. But Matteo had warned them that getting into this secure area was impossible without possessing a key or being imprisoned. So she had no choice, really. "Was that really necessary, Theo?" she snapped, especially when she realized she knew one of the two Ethereum bouncers. The bouncer looked chagrined. It was a look she recognized from his brief stint as a Spindrift employee, during which he'd accidentally thrown out the wrong patrons multiple times. She should have realized he would still be difficult to work with. But it wasn't as if she had another option.
"You said make it believable," Theo said, perplexed.
Arthi sighed, feeling bruised all over.
"Believable, Theo. Not kill me.
Now let me through."
"But you promised you'd pay."
"How would it look if I'd carried a bag full of Duven in here, eh?" Arthi asked.
"Exactly. Go see Felix tomorrow and you'll have your pay."
He thought about what she said, then nodded once and let her through the second door. Arthi straightened her coat and then her hair, carefully closing the door behind her. The corridor was long and empty, thrumming with the din of the festivities on the other side. Arthi reached the bend where the Ethereum's vault was fit snug into the corner. A massive structure of brass with an elaborate lock she wished she could crack simply for the fun of it. If Arthi were looking to hide an important document, that was the last place she would store it, because it would be the first place anyone looked. Eventually, the corridor branched into the hall of offices. The second entrance to the locked corridors was at the end of it. A seating area spread out to her left, a glass wall to her right, where she caught a glimpse of the society in motion, and a figure waiting for her on the other side of the door. Arthi turned the lock and opened it. Moths fluttered in her chest. "Hello, darling," Matteo said, tipping a fluted glass at her. Even disguised, he looked every bit himself. The way he walked,
the way he smiled, the way that damned dimple taunted from his cheek. How are you finding the Ethereum? Every night, when the foundries go dark and the patrols get lax, men shed their shirts, wrap gauze around their fists, and throw sweaty punches in a ring, Marthy replied, dropping her hands on the back of her chair. She pursed her lips in thought for a second. This feels about the same. Matteo laughed, and the sound made her wholly aware of herself.
You never fail to surprise me.
And yet you behave exactly as I expect. He looked at her as if she was something special. Something more than a criminal with a gun. Something more than a monster with a timer running out. He swept his tongue across his lower lip, and she mimicked the movement across her own. He swished the blood in his flute, stirring up the scent of it with a soft sigh. Her head swam. His gaze missed nothing. Are you quite all right? He asked, watching her every motion. Of course I am. She clenched her jaw. It was the stress getting to her. Yes, they'd forged coins, thwarted sisters, and gotten into the Ethereum without losing their heads. But the Ram's ledger was still out there. Spindrift still hung in the balance. You know what you have to do, she said. I do, he said with a nod, and she turned to leave. So, Pen Arundel, hmm? She turned back, suddenly acutely aware of everything around her. The brush of air on the nape of her neck, the footsteps on the polished wood floors, the hum of a violin somewhere in the Ethereum. Please, please, please. Matteo swayed in front of her. Her limbs felt leaden, her head light. She had known what she was getting into, but she'd still chosen to do it for her tea room. You and I have much in common, he said almost gently. Arthi bit out a laugh. How would you know? Pen is... Well, he was the only one who was there for me when I first turned, Matteo said. He's told me a lot about you. Arthi regarded him, trying to decipher how much was a lot, and it made her realize she cared what Matteo thought of her. It was a scary epiphany she did not wish to dwell on. That means... Wait. He's whom you wanted to get in here to see, Arthi said. Matteo nodded, barely surprised she had figured him out. When I learned he hadn't been seen outside the Ethereum for weeks, I knew something was wrong. He might be head of the place, but there's very few vampires here that he can trust. I never thought I'd get the chance to possibly see him again, but I knew that if anything had happened to him, he would have wanted you to know. The concern in his voice struck a chord inside her. That's why you were racking up a tab at Spindrift, she said as his plan slowly fell into place in her mind. That's why you wanted me to come to your house. He laughed softly. You are extremely difficult to arrange a meeting with, Arthi. But you didn't tell me, Arthi said, refusing to believe him. He looked contrite. Can you blame me? You were quite intense that first night. And then you showed up with the Horn Guard in tow the second time. Anywho, what matters is that you're here now. Here, Arthi repeated. Here, Matteo agreed. At the crossroads of your past and your future.
35. Jin. The corridor wound artfully before spilling into the massive main hall where the auction was to take place. Rows of lacquered chairs lined the room, many already occupied by vampires. Jin plucked one of the bidder numbers from the table and found himself a seat. Beside him, Flick did the same, Leif's kitten snug in the crook of her arm. The room was filling up. Vampires had come from all across Atenia. Many of them, to Jin's surprise,
seemed to be immigrants who had retained elements of their home cultures. There were vampires in form-fitting chupaus, and others in wide-sleeved agbadas. He caught sight of the flowing folds of hanfu, the regal skirts of an anarkali, and saris in sapphire, emerald and onyx, each one beaded more heavily than the last. On the stage up ahead, the auctioneer's assistant propped open a stand, while a vampire with silver hair and skin the same shade as Arthi's swaggered down the aisle, a cravat knotted at his throat. He was carrying something large and rectangular and draped in beige. "Look for whoever brings in the auction piece," Matteo had instructed. "That's the pocket you'll want to pick for the key." Sir Silverhair was their man. The assistant straightened at the sight of him.
"Siddharth, what took you so long?"
"Apologies," he drawled. "I was unaware you'd finally learned how to read a clock."
The assistant fumed, but took the parcel from him and set it on the stand with care, unveiling the object beneath an angled light. Siddharth gave it a wistful look, as if it were his, but Jin had stolen and studied enough art to recognize its artist. Matteo Andoni. His work had a distinctness to it, an urgency that didn't quite match the vampire himself, or any vampire for that matter. Time held no meaning for them when their limbs worked eternally. Perhaps that was where the Aetherium saw the value in Matteo's work. That reminder of time passing. That longing, even if they'd never admit to it. Everyone yearned for what they couldn't have. This particular piece featured a single stroke of shadow, obscure enough to be anything but defined enough to be a woman. She stood in a blurred street, lamps scattered like souls, her head tilted toward a full moon, as if she were a wolf calling for her love. There was something hollow about the piece, haunting and lonely. "Until later." Siddharth inclined his head with a flourish. When he lifted his hand for a wave, Jin saw the keys Matteo had promised would be there. There were three of them, made of brass. Jin barely caught a glimpse before Siddharth slipped them into his right pocket and turned to leave. Jin turned too, leaning closer to Flick, who looked at him as if he'd lost his head when he emptied a pocket of keys into her lap.
"Jin!"
she exclaimed as he shuffled through a mess of silver and gold, until he found three brass keys that he slid onto a ring.
"Oh, this is marvellous. Wherever did you find all this?"
"Under my pillow, love," he answered. He'd meant for the words to be innocent, but her breath caught and he curled a crooked grin. "You'd be surprised what all can be found on my bed."
Truth be told, he had been picking pockets since he'd stepped into the Aetherium in preparation for this. In that time, he'd learned it was a lot harder to pull off a believable sneer when one was missing the keys to their own house. Flick looked up sharply. The auctioneer's assistant tapped his gavel on the podium, and the thrum of voices turned down a notch.
"Oh."
Jin followed her line of sight to a new vampire taking the place of the assistant. Every inch of him demanded attention, from the length of his dark hair to the aristocratic planes of his face. He was a mix of races, that much Jin could tell. Not quite Atenian, not quite foreign, and he looked vaguely familiar. He surveyed the room and bent to murmur in his assistant's ear.
"Keep an eye out,"
Jin told Flick and hurried after Siddharth, who was lingering at the entrance as a flock of vampires in dark gowns and netted hats filed inside, hands at their throats and fangs bared beneath bayonet smiles. Making a fool of himself in front of a lady wasn't in his nature, but the job was the job. One hand in his pocket, Jin stumbled on the rug with an oof, pitching himself at Siddharth. He slammed into an unexpected wall of muscle and hooked a finger around the vampire's suspender to shift his focus as Jin swapped the keys and righted himself.
"Someone's had a little too much to drink,"
Siddharth said, none the wiser as he observed Jin through hooded eyes. He made to catch his hand, but Jin released him and pulled back with a tusk. Sorry there, I'm already spoken for. Flick's face popped into Jin's head at the words before he plunged into the crowd of vampires, slipping through a cloud of perfume and jeweled skirts. If he somehow found himself in possession of a pearl-studded silver barrette and a carved jade fountain pen when he finally made it to the empty foyer, it wasn't his fault. After getting the keys to Laith, Jin made his way back to the auction hall. He wasn't certain whose bidder number he snatched on his way back in, but he sent them a silent apology as he drove up the price of the auction again and again and again. 4,000 duvin, the dark-haired vampire called from behind the podium. Once more from the gentleman in the back. That once more sounded belligerent. Beside him, Flick's paddle went up with excruciating hesitance. Was she worried she'd truly have to pay? 5,000, he announced. Jin saw the crimson in his eyes, betraying his age. And Doni's work isn't even worth half that, someone murmured. I dare say I agree, murmured another. Appreciation of the arts is an acquired skill, Jin said, insulted on Mateo's behalf. I wholly agree, Flick echoed, prompting others to pick sides. Another gentleman lifted his paddle, followed by a lady with a cane. The vampire behind the podium called out the next figure. 9,000 duvin, the vampire announced. Have we any others? He began a spiel about the piece and the cause it supported. Jin's paddle went up, and then a slew of vampires followed, paddles rising and falling. A figure started down the aisle, and Jin narrowed his eyes. Mateo. The vampire at the podium paused too, scrutinizing him as if he knew him, but couldn't quite see past the disguise. What was he doing? Jin? Flick dragged out his name. I see him, Jin murmured. Mateo climbed up the front of the stage, eliciting murmurs from the crowd and wrenching the auction to a halt. He leaned close and whispered in the dark-haired vampire's ear, and Jin was filled with a sense of foreboding too late to act upon it. Then the dark-haired vampire set down his gavel and looked straight at Jin. Damn it all. Time for Plan C, Jin said. He didn't understand. The man was stepping away from the podium, moving toward them. What had Mateo told him? What's Plan C? Flick asked nervously. Jin looked down at the vampire beside him. Have you ever been hit with an auction paddle? I beg your pardon. The vampire sounded flabbergasted. No? Jin asked and slammed his paddle across the vampire's face. You're welcome. The vampire shot to his feet, swinging his paddle with such force, Jin barely had time to duck before it slammed into the head of the vampire beside him. The woman leaped up. Chaos erupted. Come along, Felicity, Jin shouted, snatching her hand, fully aware of how perfectly it fit in his. The two of them wriggled their way out of the row of chairs. So sorry, Flick shouted at someone. And when Jin looked back at Flick, she wasn't stricken with fear or worry. She looked delighted. Excited. As if perhaps she could get used to this life. He pretended not to notice the way she looked at her hand when he released it, ignoring the sparks that echoed down his own. What was he? A schoolboy? It was her hand. Come now, the paddle can't avert that much, he yelled as they ran. Really, the vampires ought to be thanking him for bringing some much-needed energy to their undead lives. More chairs screeched, and an uproar ensued. But when Jin stopped at the entrance to the main hall and looked back, neither Mateo nor the dark-haired vampire anywhere to be seen.
36. Arthi's head spun again. She threw her hand against the wall to steady herself, grateful neither Jin nor any of the others were here to witness this. It was getting worse. She was getting worse. The hall seemed to extend without end. Doors upon doors on either side of her. Had Mateo said Penn's office was the fifth door from the right, or the seventh? Footsteps sounded on the carpet, and Arthi had an excuse ready on her tongue for whoever turned the corner. But it wasn't a vampire. "Laith," she said, "the auction's begun." He tossed her the keys and paused.
"Are you hurt?"
Every curt response she'd used in the past rose to her tongue, but every single one faded when he scrutinized her. She didn't want his care. She didn't want his coddling. Focus. He was toying with her, trying to get under her skin again, to make her trust him. The ledger was close, and he knew it as well as she did.
"Did the bouncer go too far?"
he asked, insistent. "If he did, he'd be dead," Arthi replied. She gritted her teeth. It simply felt, at times, that his concern bordered on doubt of her capabilities. Perhaps she was being too harsh, too critical. "But no, he didn't hurt me." His brow furrowed at her reply.
"Good. I'm pleased you can still hold up your end of the bargain."
That was enough of whatever this was, Arthi decided. She continued down the corridor, and that was when she smelled it. Something pungent and sweet. A whiff of leather and wool soaked in spice. A handful of chapters of her life bottled into a scent. Arthi had never needed Mateo's directions. She could have found Penn Arundel's office by smell alone. She paused before the door.
"Who is he?"
Laith asked, and his voice was almost kind. Again a ploy. He was a high captain. He worked for the Ram. "A vampire," Arthi said. She knew that wasn't the answer he wanted. She turned the key. The click as jarring as a gunshot.
"Is that why you pause before the threshold? As if it's the gallows then?"
Laith asked. The past had been known to hang a person. She said nothing as she stepped inside. A massive desk was placed in the centre with an imposing chair behind it. The fire burning in the hearth angled shadows down the panelled walls, a dark contrast to the sepia rug spread over the floorboards. Maps lined the walls, pins tacked on destinations Arthi had never heard of. A pair of armchairs were accented by vases and fresh flowers. Despite the amalgamation of trinkets and goods on the bookshelves, two mirrors stood out strangely. "Start looking," Arthi said. "You'll find it," Mateo had told her. "You're keen enough." She began at the desk, where another tiny mirror was attached on a swivel, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. She turned to the walls, searching the panels for one that could open into a recess for storing valuables. Laith took down a painting and did the same, but came up empty. When he hung it back up, Arthi recognized it as one of Mateo's. Only he used colour in such an arbitrary way, brushstrokes chasing the value of time, grasping onto what he no longer had. She despised sorrow. It was a futile emotion, not actionable like vengeance and anger were. And yet his art made her sad. In one of the mirrors on the bookshelves, Arthi saw Laith shove a hand through his hair. He didn't look like he was preparing to do anything drastic, like leave her behind. But then again, Arthi was pretty good at masking intentions herself. Another mirror was set into the wall behind him, doubling the fire's warm glow on his features. It was strange that the hearth was lit, and she wondered if it was only to make the vampire feel human again. No. Penn had been a vampire for a very long time.
long enough for the novelty of being human to wear out. Long enough to know that vampires couldn't see their own reflections in a mirror.
The mirrors, it's a puzzle,
Arthi murmured, something buzzing to life under her skin. She swiveled the little mirror on the desk to face the fire. Its surface shone, casting a glow to the area around it. She was filled with a giddy emotion. Nothing spoke to her more than a puzzle, a disparate collection of pieces that promised a correlation not so different from the satisfying click of a lock beneath her brother's careful picks.
Get that one,
she called to Laith, nodding at another small mirror that stood like an ornament on an end table by one of the armchairs. He frowned but adjusted it, turning it to and fro until the mirror in her hand shot a line of fire into his. She met Laith's eyes and grinned before she could think better of it. He stared at her almost blankly. Now what? He said, a hush to his tone. Her head swayed, that hunger rising, ravaging. She needed to think, and it wasn't letting her. Shouts echoed outside the office walls, a world away. She studied the remaining mirrors, one on the other end of the desk, two on the bookshelves, and then a third one on the far side of the office, glinting inside an eight-pointed star cut into the wall. It was directly in line with one of the mirrors on the bookshelves. There. A lock. Arthi adjusted the first of the bookshelf mirrors until it caught the firelight cast by Laith's mirror. He matched her actions without instruction, swiveling the mirror on the other end of Penn's desk until the light slanted onto its surface. Arthi tinkered with the last of them. Light catapulted from one mirror to the next, pooling into the eight-pointed star until the glare was almost blinding. Then she heard the low exhale of a seal, followed by the rumble of gears. The back wall split in half, retracting to either side, to reveal a space just beyond, illuminated by a plume of light. She had expected a safe or a lockbox, not an entire chamber. In that room was the Ram's ledger. In that room lay Spindrift's salvation. The ground rumbled and the lamp above them swayed. Voices echoed outside the walls, loud and disorderly. Laith touched the vault doors. They made a sound like glass, but seemed far more solid. We don't have much time, Laith said. Arthi wanted to correct him. You don't have much time, she wanted to say. If Jin doesn't reach us before Ethereum security does, we... That was more than reason enough to leave him to the wolves.
Let's not doubt my brother,
Arthi said, recalling his description of the ledger while leading him into the vault. It was as cold as a grave, windowless and uninspiring. Journals were lined up on plain shelves beside stacks of letters that wore a fine layer of dust like sugar granules by an empty teacup. She saw a collection of pistols and a tarnished astrolabe, bound books with ribbons in crimson and sapphire and violet. Arthi opened all of them. Against a wall, two more pieces of Matteo's art lounged as leisurely as the painter himself. Several chairs were arranged in the room too. If there was space allotted for leisure, there was bound to be a way to lock the vault from the inside. To hide inside the vault.
Are you sure you want to go through with this? Came Jin's voice in her head.
Arthi. Laith stood before a desk. Beside that desk, Arthi saw a lever he appeared not to have noticed. That was exactly what she had been looking for. In his hands was a book marked with a violet ribbon. The ledger. Oh, and that too. Arthi walked up to him before he could flip open the cover. She studied the way he held it and planned her next actions, eagerly leaning in to try and make sure it was actually the ledger he said it was.
Violet ribbon, standard leather casing, Laith explained, letting the flap stay closed.
Men did love explaining the obvious. He looked at her.
Now, where's Jin?
What was more curious, Arthi thought, was the way he gripped the ledger. Tight. Away from her. How he hadn't allowed her to give it a closer look. How he didn't trust her. He didn't know she'd already thumbed through the pages, ensured it was what they were looking for. It was his loss that he hadn't done the same. Or her cunning. Still, he didn't look for a weapon to kill her. He didn't look like he was about to leave her. Trepidation whispered along her veins, doubt rippling through. And Arthi rarely entertained doubt. Laith strode back into the office and froze. The door to the office rattled, shouts echoing from the other side. Arthi took half a step back into the vault and half a step closer to the lever by the desk.
"Get behind me," Laith said to her, tucking the book into his robes.
The door flung open. Vampires flooded the room, stakes at the ready, fangs sharp. And as a pair of vampires grabbed his arms, Laith glanced behind him, only to find the office wall staring back, the secret chamber gone. And Arthi watched it all from the two-way mirror inside Penn's vault.